Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On February 14th, Donald Trump quietly repealed a Dodd-Frank rule requiring oil companies to disclose payments to foreign governments. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson lobbied against the rule when he was the CEO of ExxonMobil, claiming it was vital to Exxon's business in Russia. On February 16th, Trump signed a bill overturning a rule prohibiting mountaintop coal operations from dumping waste into stream valleys. While it took more than 7 years of working with the public and stakeholders to develop the regulation, it was wiped out in a matter of months. And then on February 28th, Trump reversed a rule that would have made buying a gun harder for individuals with severe mental illnesses. The National Rifle Association lobbied against the popular bill Obama proposed after the Sandy Hook massacre, but Congress and Trump did not call attention to it. These are among some of the first legislative actions Republicans in Congress and the Trump administration have taken using an obscure law known as the Congressional Review Act. It was signed by Bill Clinton back in 1996, and it allows Congress to roll back regulations approved within the last 60 legislative days. Before Donald Trump, the only time it has been successfully used was when George W. Bush repealed OSHA's ergonomics rules. The Trump administration and the Republican-controlled Congress have successfully used the Congressional Review Act 14 times. According to Public Citizen, an organization that closely follows the act, industries and associations pushing CRA bills spent more than $800 million lobbying Congress last year and gave $500 million to members of Congress, three-quarters to Republicans. Joining us today to break down the Congressional Review Act is James Goodwin, senior policy analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform, a nonprofit organization with a network of scholars working to protect health, safety, and the environment. And James Goodwin joins us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Hi, James. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So many of us have never heard of the Congressional Review Act until now. And here is how Public Citizen describes it. They closely follow it. They say that the CRA allows Congress, by majority vote in both chambers with limited debate, to override recently issued protections. What would you add?
I would add that the CRA has only limited ability to offer Congress and the president to strike down recently passed rules. And the reason for that is no president is going to strike down any rule that his administration has issued. So it only takes on significance once every 4 to 8 years when you have a change in presidential administration, which is what we're facing here. So in a lot of ways, it's almost like the legislative Groundhog Day. It has this periodic significance that everybody likes to, or where it takes on this increased importance. And so, you know, 8 years ago when Obama first took the Obama administration first started, a lot of people took a look at this law briefly, and then it sort of went back into obscurity for 8 years, and now it's come back again and obtained a lot of notoriety.
When I first read about this, my first question was, why did Bill Clinton sign this in 1996?
I think there's this general perception that it is a neutral tool in that it offers both Democrats and Republicans an equal opportunity to strike down regulations that reflect policies that they disagree with. And I don't know if that's exactly right. And the reason I say that is because in general, and you know this is painting with a broad brush, but in general, Republicans favor less regulations and Democrats favor more regulations. And the problem with the Congressional Review Act is it doesn't just strike down the rule that's targeted. It also prevents the agency from issuing another rule in substantially the same form. In other words, it ties their hands going forward in this way. And so that's really appealing to Republicans who want to block regulations in various areas. Where it's not appealing would be for Democrats who may dislike a regulation for not being strong enough, but they still want a regulation going forward. So in that sense, it doesn't offer quite the same balanced value to both parties.
This is an important point, and I think it bears repeating. The Congressional Review Act blocks agencies from issuing rules that are substantially the same without express authorization from Congress. And once these protections are repealed under the Act, we will not get them back anytime soon.
That's correct. And a good example of that would be the OSHA regulation you mentioned at the top of the show. This was struck down in 2001, and it broadly addressed ergonomics issues in the workplace, work ergonomic safety issues. And even though this issue has only become more important in the intervening years as a worker health and safety issue, OSHA has just been completely unwilling to take it on, or not unwilling, just discouraged from taking it on due to fear about this provision in the Congressional Review Act, because it's not clear what it means, what a substantially the same regulation is, because that term isn't defined within the Congressional Review Act. But OSHA, doesn't have a ton of resources to pour into rulemakings, and they're not going to take on the risk of developing a rule in this area, only to see it struck down for not being different enough. And so in effect, we have this huge problem of in worker health and safety that OSHA just, I think, has felt too risk averse to tackle because of the Congressional Review Act.
The rule that you're referring to was passed under the Clinton administration, and these were workplace ergonomic rules that were intended to prevent carpal tunnel, tendinitis, and any other problems associated with repetitive stress injury. And under this rule, if injuries were reported, then a company would have to adjust workstations. And as you said, the Bush administration used the CRA to get rid of this rule. What I thought was so interesting is Politico had a really long story about the Congressional Review Act. And Susan Dudley, a top regulatory official in the Bush administration, said the administration, George W. Bush, used the CRA only once because it's an unusually blunt instrument. She called the CRA a sledgehammer.
Correct. And I think that's a large part of why she would say that, and why I would agree with her on that, is because of the substantially the same form language. It has this almost salt the earth quality in that it doesn't just knock down this rule. It effectively prevents an agency from tackling really important health, safety, environmental, public interest issues in that area ever again until Congress explicitly authorizes the agency to take the issue on again. And in these days of highly partisan politics, it just seems unlikely that Congress, who probably couldn't come together to agree on their least favorite beetle, let alone pass legislation to take on these really important social issues.
What about the Obama administration? What did it do with the CRA when it had a democratically controlled Congress?
Well, and that gets right to the point I was making earlier, how it doesn't really offer quite the same balanced opportunity for Democratic administrations that it does for Republican ones, because they face the same circumstances that the Trump administration faced. They were coming in after an administration of the opposite party. They were joined by majorities of their own party, and they faced all these rules that were issued in the last few months of the Bush administration that the Obama administration did not agree with. And the problem, I mean, they disagreed with them not because they disliked regulation in general in this area. They didn't think these regulations were strong enough. And the problem with the Congressional Review Act is if Obama and congressional Democrats at the time had used the CRA to get rid of these rules, then they wouldn't have been able, in theory, to come back and issue stronger regulations in those areas like they would have liked to. And that's why I pointed out earlier that it is not policy neutral, or in the sense of for both Republican and Democratic administrations.
The CRA states Congress can rescind a rule within 60 days of it being published in the Federal Register. And as it stands, the Trump administration can no longer use the CRA because we're already toward the end of May. But how far back can the Congressional Review Act go to repeal a law?
Oh, that is a huge source of controversy right now. The generally accepted view is that it's 60 legislative days. And even figuring out what that means is incredibly complicated because it's this combination of days that the House is in session and the Senate is in session. And, you know, there are days where it's pro forma session days and those count. And sort of even calculating 60 days is a chore in and of itself. But in general, it lasts. I mean, it's not 60 calendar days. And depending on how often Congress happens to be in session, it can last anywhere from 3 months to 6 months. So it really is dependent upon how often Congress shows up to work. But the controversy I was pointing out to, there's some folks out there who say that rules that stretch back even much further, even as far back as 1996, should be targeted for the Congressional Review Act, and they point to this provision in the CRA itself, this very technical provision that they say agencies haven't complied with, which makes them susceptible to repeal under the Congressional Review Act.
Public Citizen says that the Trump administration now can no longer use the CRA. How much time does an administration have to use it?
Again, this is based upon session days. And so the way the Congressional Review Act works is it doesn't give Congress any power it doesn't already have. And that's because regulations are, the creatures of statutes. Congress can pass a statute anytime it wants to, getting rid of a regulation that it dislikes. What the Congressional Review Act does is it suspends some of the deliberative procedures that Congress usually imposes upon itself when carrying out legislation. So things like hearings, the filibuster in the Senate, and it just makes it easier to pass these resolutions. And under the Congressional Review Act, the suspension of these procedures is only temporary. It lasts 60 days in the Senate, and that's what expired in May. So that's why going forward, Congress can still pass legislation getting rid of rules that it doesn't like from the Obama administration, but it has to go through the normal legislative process, and that means things like getting 60 votes in the Senate, which is very unlikely.
James Goodwin is senior policy analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform. It's a nonprofit that works with scholars to protect health, safety, and the environment. And today we're talking about the Congressional Review Act. And if you haven't heard of this act until now, you're definitely not alone because it hasn't been used that much until now. Bill Clinton signed it back in 1996, and then George W. Bush used it once to overturn OSHA rules that would have ensured that companies create ergonomic setups for workers who have repetitive stress injury, for example. Donald Trump has used it 14 times, and Public Citizen has been closely following this. It allows Congress to override recently issued protections. Donald Trump has used it 14 times, and if you have any questions or comments about this, we'd love to hear from you. Also, on May 16th, Democratic Senators Cory Booker and Tom Udall introduced a bill to repeal the CRA. So what do you think of that? If you work in any of these industries that have been affected by this, whether it's the environment, women's health, workplace issues, animal protections, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Oh, also privacy. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. James, let's talk about the first rule that was overturned. On February 14th, Donald Trump quietly repealed a Dodd-Frank rule requiring oil companies to disclose payments to foreign governments. And Secretary of State Rex Tillerson lobbied against this rule when he was the CEO of ExxonMobil. First off, tell us about this rule.
So it was designed, well, first of all, the it reflects a bipartisan amendment to Dodd-Frank. The two senators who sponsored the amendment that created this provision were Republican and a Democrat. So this is an example of one of the problems with the Congressional Review Act. You have these bipartisan legislative actions that enjoy broad support, and then when it comes time to actually enforce them, you have this narrow partisan minority striking it down. Now, this particular provision was meant to address something known as a resource curse, where countries, say, in sub-Saharan Africa, which have a lot of resources and not a lot of strong governmental institutions, bring in all this money to develop their natural resources, and then that money doesn't exactly get distributed to the broader economy. It ends up through various forms of corruption being held by well-connected political figures. So this doesn't prevent oil companies or other industries involved in these sorts of activities from doing these things. It simply just said that you have to report it in this very sort of transparent way to prevent government corruption in these foreign countries. And evidently, this was too much even for them to countenance. In a lot of ways, there's other international institutions that do similar reporting transparency requirements. For a lot of companies, they're already doing stuff like this. This is just meant to make sure that the bad actors are held to account the same as the good ones.
And as you mentioned, according to the Rules at Risk website, Republican and Democratic members of Congress worked for over a decade to address the resource curse and mitigate its impacts. And according to the rulesatrisk.org site, which follows the CRA, lobbyists for Big Oil, the American Petroleum Institute, have actively opposed this law, and they looked at how much, for example, these industries have given Congress. Oil and gas spent $130 million on lobbying in 2015 and $97 million, wow, on political spending in 2016. 89% went to Republicans. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce spent $79 million on lobbying in 2015 and $2.9 million on political spending in 2016. 99% of it went to Republicans. Can you talk about that also, James?
Yeah, and not only that, the main Senate sponsor of the Senate resolution, James Inhofe from Oklahoma, received $465,950 from the oil and gas industry during the most recent election cycle. So, I think this is just another example of how the Congressional Review Act, I don't want to say that these reflect like a express or implied quid pro quo between industry and the sponsoring members of Congress, but there's clearly financial ties that exist between these industries and the members of Congress. It appears that they're doing favors for their corporate benefactors. It creates the appearance of impropriety for most members of the public, which just further corrodes public esteem for our democratic institutions at a time when they can't get much lower. It has a long-term negative effect on Congress. In this sense, and if you look at all these, a lot of these resolutions, it's a similar story. A lot of the members of Congress who sponsored the resolutions have close financial ties to the industries themselves that stand to most directly benefit.
And again, we should say that once these protections are repealed under the CRA, we will not get them back anytime soon. Let's talk about the stream protection rule. This was designed to make sure that communities don't get stuck with the consequences of toxic water pollution from industrial coal mining operations. This is the stream protection rule finalized by the U.S. Department of the Interior in December 2016. Let's talk about that one.
Sure. This is another example of a rule that had been under development for a very long time. One of the first things that that the Obama administration had done when coming into office was commit to developing this rule, because the Bush administration, the outgoing Bush administration, had issued a rule in this area that was very, very weak. And as I pointed out earlier, the Obama administration didn't want to rely on something like the Congressional Review Act to get rid of it. Instead, they committed to undertaking a new rulemaking to issue a stronger version of the rule. And they spent the next 7-plus years doing just that. And it was released this past December, as you had mentioned, reflected years of study by the Department of Interior's experts on engineering, ecological issues, public health, unprecedented outreach to affected stakeholders in industry, Appalachian communities, environmental organizations, and all of this. And then, you know, in comes Republican-controlled Congress and the Trump administration in just a matter of weeks with no hearings, very limited debate because, you know, the Congressional Review Act is designed to prevent or discourage all these kinds of deliberative features of our democracy. In just a matter of weeks, this rule is expunged from the record.
In a matter of weeks, and it took more than 7 years of working with the public and stakeholders, as you say, as you stated. Again, rulesatrisk.org says, in Appalachia, mountaintop removal mining has been responsible for the destruction of 2,000 miles of streams and 2.5 million acres of Appalachia's ancient forests. And communities impacted by coal mining have been waiting for updated rules, which would provide them with some of the necessary tools to help coal companies accountable for the toxic contaminants they dump into the waterways. And now this is gone. The rulesatrisk.org also points out that the coal mining industry spent $8.4 million on lobbying in 2015, $13 million on political spending in 2016, 97% went to Republicans. National Association of Manufacturers also pushed for this repeal. Last year, they spent $39,000 on political spending and $16 million on lobbying, 96% to Republicans. Again, the U.S. Chamber was fighting for this repeal. They spent $79 million on lobbying last year, $29 million on political spending, 99% went to Republicans. James, Politico points out that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, and various corporations had a laundry list of repeals that they wanted, and they got pretty much everything they wanted.
Yeah, I would say they had a – I mean, if it was – several months ago, I had several reporters asking me how many of these resolutions I thought were going to get adopted, and at the time I said half a dozen. I really didn't think it was going to be 14. I'm shocked it was this many. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One is because, as we've been saying, it's such a blunt tool. It has this very far-reaching effect into the future. And I think that's what in the past has discouraged it's sort of reckless use, like we've seen in the last few months. You know, the George W. Bush administration only used it once, and they could have used it a dozen times. But I think at the time there was this norm that sort of recognized what a destructive tool the Congressional Review Act ultimately is that discouraged its use in this way that we've been seeing. You know, and the problem is what happens going forward now that the dam has sort of been unleashed on its use. I mean, in 4 years or 8 years, you might see it used 24 times or 36 times. Just any sort of norms that may have existed in Congress that discouraged its misuse have gone completely by the wayside, which is consistent with almost everything we've seen in the last couple of months under the Trump administration with, you know, these long-cherished political norms of sort of partisan restraint just being obliterated.
James Goodwin is senior policy analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform, a nonprofit organization with a network of scholars working to protect health, safety, and the environment. Today we are talking about the Congressional Review Act. It's an obscure law that was signed by Bill Clinton back in 96, and it allows Congress to roll back regulations approved within the last 60 legislative days. Donald Trump has used it 14 times. George W. Bush used it only once to repeal OSHA's ergonomics rules, and we'll be talking about that. And we'll also be talking about some of these rules that Donald Trump overturned that will affect workers. We'll be joined by Debbie Berkowitz, senior fellow with the National Employment Law Project. And we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call. On the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. You can take KALW wherever your smartphone goes. Instantly stream our signal from the KALW.org homepage or subscribe to KALW shows as podcasts at KALW.org/subscribe. We're listening to Your Call. Once again, it's 866-798-TALK. Call and say what you want to say about the Congressional Reviewer.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Hastings Law Professor Joan Williams about her new book, White Working Class, Overcoming Class Cluelessness. She asks, why are so many elites, why are they out of touch with the white working class? That's tomorrow. And then on Friday, it's our media roundtable. We will be talking about the state of journalism in Mexico. We'll also be talking about the AT&T strike that took place Friday through the weekend. Today, we are talking about the Congressional Review Act. This is a law that was passed by or signed by Bill Clinton in 96. It allows Congress to roll back regulations approved within the last 60 legislative days. And Donald Trump has used this rule 14 different times to affect everything from oil companies having to disclose payments to foreign governments. They no longer need to do that. He also signed a rule, a bill that would overturn a rule prohibiting mountaintop coal operations from dumping waste into stream valleys. It also affects women's health. And we're joined today by James Goodwin, senior policy analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform. And now I would like to welcome Debbie Berkowitz to the show. Debbie is senior fellow at the National Employment Law Project. They work to support low-wage workers and the unemployed and to create good jobs. Debbie Berkowitz served as senior policy advisor for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration after previously serving as OSHA's chief of staff from 2009 to 2013. And Debbie joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Happy to join. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Why do you think Bill Clinton signed the Congressional Review Act back in 1996?
So I think you have to remember and put it in context that this was after sort of the Newt Gingrich revolution in Congress that, you know, was eventually sort of, you know, he did eventually lose his seat. But, you know, it and I think so in the timing of the day, I really don't think they thought that this would be used many times at all. And in addition, when it was passed, there was a strong sentiment that it would give Congress the ability, if they did a rule that somehow they felt was so far-reaching and wrong, would let Congress then pass a law that would direct the agency on what kind of rule it should have issued. So it wasn't really completely meant to wipe things off the books that agencies spent forever with. And I'll give you the example of ergonomics, which I know you've been talking about, and I guess I want to sort of say first that there are real costs to working people and their families of what this current Congress has done and the president has done in terms of repealing all these rules, which I'll go into. But when in 2001, Congress got lobbied very hard by the Chamber of Commerce and big business to repeal OSHA's rule that would prod employers if they had high rates of workers getting carpal tunnel syndrome or tendonitis, to sort of figure out what could be done to prevent these disorders. They were the single largest kind of work-related injury in the country then, and they still are today. And when Congress overturned the rule, because, you know, you had a, we needed a simple majority, and you had a Republican president willing to sign it, during the whole debate, Congress kept saying, well, we know ergonomics is a big problem, and we don't want workers to be endangered. We just want a slightly different rule, and we're going to pass a law to tell OSHA what that slightly different rule should be. And they never did. And so to this day, you know, musculoskeletal disorders make up 33% of all work-related injuries and illnesses. There are over 300,000 cases a year that involved lost work days in the workplace. OSHA hasn't been able to issue a similar regulation since.
That happened under the George W. Bush administration, and of the 14 rules that the Trump administration have repealed, many affect workers. Let's talk about the rule that clarifies that employers have an obligation to maintain accurate records of serious workplace injuries and illnesses for up to 5 years. According to rulesatrisk.org, since 1972, OSHA has protected workers by requiring employers in higher hazard industries to maintain accurate records at serious work-related injuries and illnesses. And every administration in the last 45 years has enforced this requirement. Well, what about this one, Debbie? Now it's gone.
Right. And I want to tell you a couple of things first, and that is the winners here in this act that Congress, the Republicans in Congress, and then what the Trump administration signed, you know, are big corporate lobbyists and corporations who cut corners on safety and endanger workers. This did not help one worker in the country. And the other thing I want to tell you is that this was not on the original list by big business, the Chamber of Commerce, of what they went to the Trump administration and said overturn. This was just a recent small rule clarifying that OSHA could impose sanctions on employers that kept fraudulent injury and illness records. And only employers in the most dangerous industries have to keep these records. And the point of these records is that these are the records that if OSHA came into your plant or the government, they look at to figure out, you know, where the hazards are in your workplace. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a way also for companies and workers to be able to get data on where the injuries are occurring. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics collects a certain percentage of these every year where they put out statistics for injuries and illnesses in the workplace. So it's really important that these records be accurate. And OSHA put out a very small rule clarifying its ability to sanction employers if they keep fraudulent records. And industry just happened to go to a Republican congressman on the House who said, well, as long as you're getting rid of stuff, get rid of this. And they did, with almost no debate. It just sailed through the House and Senate, and it was signed by Trump. And now employers have license to hide injuries, falsify injury records, and violate the law without any sanctions.
And to bring this down to the ground, Debbie, the slaughterhouse industry is one of the most dangerous work environments in the country. And rulesatrisk.org points out that in 1987, there was $1 million fine against a meat processor for years of underreported injuries to evade OSHA inspectors. And OSHA's inspections and fines resulted in serious improvement in this company's safety program and led to renewed attention to safety in the meat industry in the late 80s, which resulted in saving lives and preventing amputations and hospitalizations. Now that this rule is off the books, what happens if someone who works on the line gets hurt? What can OSHA do or not do now that this rule is not in place?
So the real issue here is, you know, OSHA is, I should tell all your listeners that the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is jurisdiction over worker safety, and it's set up to assure companies follow certain common sense safety rules is teeny when it comes to government agencies, so that it would take OSHA over 140 years to get into every workplace under its jurisdiction just once. So OSHA prioritizes its inspections to the most hazardous workplaces. So when they go into a workplace, they look at a company's injury and illness records. And if the records are fraudulent, if they're not accurate, then OSHA may say, oh, your injury records are rate is low, and I'm not going to do an inspection. And that's what happened back in the 80s in the meatpacking industry. Big companies did not accurately record injuries and illnesses, so when OSHA went in the plants, they would escape inspections. And OSHA was able to figure out that companies were systematically not recording serious injuries. And in fact, just recently, the Government Accountability Office did a report that talked about underreporting still going on in the poultry industry. So that what would happen now is that if OSHA walked into a meatpacking plant and workers know what the injury rates are there, but their official records aren't accurate, OSHA can't fine the employer for not keeping accurate records and therefore won't know what the real injury rates are and therefore may not conduct inspections in these facilities.
James, what would you add?
On this particular rule, in addition, I mean, like Debbie says, it helps identify trends in workplace injuries and illnesses within particular industries. And I think, for example, as we were talking earlier with regard to ergonomics, I mean, it was these kinds of reports that helped OSHA recognize that ergonomics has become such a huge problem within the poultry processing industry in particular. And, you know, the workers in this industry have received sort of a double whammy through the Congressional Review Act. On the one hand, Congress, through the CRA, has prevented or discouraged OSHA from undertaking rules to directly deal with ergonomics. On the other hand, through this through tackling this record keeping rule, allows in the poultry industry to further obscure how dangerous that industry really is. And so, going forward, it's just going to be that much harder for OSHA to make a dent on this issue.
Another one that affects workers is the Fair Pay and Safe Workplace Executive Order, which requires contractors to comply with workplace laws before receiving new government contracts. Can you talk about this one, Debbie?
Oh, yeah, you bet. So let me just give you and your listeners some background and to say that it is well established that companies with significant violations of worker protection laws continue to be awarded federal contracts. These are big federal contracts of like $500,000 or more. Over the past, 8 or 9 years, both the Senate and the Government Accountability Office did reports to show that 30% of companies receiving the highest penalties for violations of federal laws are also federal contractors. So what the Obama administration did is drafted rules that would require, if you are applying for a large federal contract, that you had to disclose that, if you had any health and safety violations or wage theft violations or discrimination violations, that this would be part of the process of you applying for a federal contract, because there's a rule out there that the government should only contract with responsible companies that have a satisfactory record of integrity and business ethics. And the problem was, in the past, violations of labor laws were not really looked to make this judgment. And so rules were passed to say to the contracting offices in the government that are giving out all these taxpayer monies to companies, you also need to look at a company's safety record and whether they are engaging in wage theft or discrimination. Because why should taxpayer dollars reward corporations that cut corners and jeopardize worker health and safety or illegally shortchange workers on their pay or discriminate against workers? Well, I guess the Republicans in Congress and the administration decided to side with contractors, you know, who steal workers' wages and cut corners on workplace safety, and they overturned these rules.
This one is important because, again, according to rulesatrisk.org, 1 in 5 Americans are employed by companies that do business with the federal government, and every year the federal government contracts out hundreds of billions of dollars in goods and services. And according to a Senate report in 2013, 30% of the worst violators of workplace safety and wage laws continued to receive federal contracts. In 2012, the government awarded $81 billion in contracts to those companies. And according to various reports, these contractors submitted fraudulent billing statements, cost overruns, schedule delays, costing taxpayers billions of dollars. So where are the Republicans, Debbie, that always talk about waste? It seems like they would want this rule in place.
Again, I just want to reiterate that they are doing the bidding of big corporate lobbyists and siding with corporations who now feel like, wow, we can cut corners on safety. We can not have to worry about if we engage in wage theft with our hard, you know, working employees, and we'll still get federal contracts. You know, I think this is was a real common sense rule. All it required was companies to report any violations. It actually set up a whole process where if you were in violation of workplace safety laws, like, and these are serious violations or willful violations or repeat violations, then the government would work with the company to come into compliance so that they could get a federal contract. The whole goal of these rules was to bring companies who were violating federal, and in some cases, like in California, state OSHA laws, would correct their hazards or pay the workers what they were due so that they could get federal contracts. And so this is what was overturned.
And it affects people like Jason Sweat, who claimed he went unpaid for many of the hours he worked destroying chemical weapons for a government contractor. Rodney Bridget was killed when a heavy piece of heavy equipment crushed him. And Calvin Bryant was crippled in a workplace explosion that killed 14 coworkers. Before we get to calls, Debbie, what happens now that the companies no longer have to comply with this rule?
Companies who have major safety and health violations and wage theft violations can continue to get federal contracts, which are funded by taxpayer money. And I just want to say that, really, if you're in a business out there, why would you want contractors who are cutting corners and therefore saving money when you're complying with the law to be able to underbid you? I mean, this really sort of, it's bad for workers, it's bad for working families. And, you know, it's, you know, elections have consequences, as they say.
Debbie Berkowitz is senior fellow at the National Employment Law Project, and James Goodwin is senior policy analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform. Today we are talking about the Congressional Review Act, which allows Congress to roll back regulations approved within the last 60 legislative days. Donald Trump has used this 14 times. George W. Bush used it once. And you can give us a call if you have any questions or comments about this. Democrats want to get rid of it. What do you think of that? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Aaron in Oakland. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I want to ask about possible future remedies for this intolerable situation. So if a future Congress were to repeal the Congressional Review Act, would that enable the bureaucracies, the agencies of government to sort of go back and retrieve these regulations? And if not, would a new Congress just be able to elevate these rejected regulations to the status of legislation and just pass them outright as bills?
Debbie, do you want to take that one first?
Sure, I'll take this one, but then I'll also defer to James on it. So let me just tell you one thing. So with one of these OSHA regs already that was overturned by the Congressional Review Act on keeping accurate records, that Senators Murray and Blumenthal and Representatives Courtney, Scott, and Takana have already introduced legislation overturning the Congressional Review Act and directing the Department of Labor and OSHA to issue the same rule over again. Now, of course, this is a Republican House and Senate, but should you have a different Congress, they could pass this and direct the agency to reissue that rule. So that is already going on, even with the Congressional Review Act. But without, if the Congressional Review Act is overturned, which I hope it is, and I will defer to James here, but then you don't have the prohibition about issuing something that is similar to. And I just wanted to say one thing, and that is, under the Obama administration, when I was there, when we at OSHA, when we took a look at what to do, given that the ergonomics rule had been overturned, and we decided to do something very, very small, and that is just to encourage sort of more data when it came to musculoskeletal disorders that the Bureau of Labor Statistics could collect. And we proposed that, and overnight, and actually we were told by people at the Chamber of Commerce that this was like their biggest moneymaker. The Chamber of Commerce, National Association of Manufacturers, just began to lobby Congress and lobby the White House not to do this, that this was a huge thing. And eventually Congress, when Congress changed, there was a rider put on OSHA's appropriations to even be able to move forward on it. So now I'll let our other guest finish the answer here.
James?
Sure. Like Debbie pointed out, one way is to tackle these one at a time individually, which is what they're doing with the OSHA record-keeping rule. There's also a bill that was introduced last week in the Senate and the House. I forget the House sponsors, but in the Senate was Senator Booker. That it's called the Scrap Act, and it would repeal the Congressional Review Act. That's part one of it. And part two of it would be to undo the resolutions, or at least substantially the same. Or no, it would undo the resolutions that have been passed in the at least these last 14 resolutions. So that those rules could go back into effect.
Also, lawsuits. The Center for Biological Diversity sued the Trump administration for repealing protections for wolves, bears, and other wildlife on Alaska's national wildlife refuges. President Obama implemented a rule that prohibited killing wolves and their pups in their dens, gunning down bears at bait stations, and shooting them from airplanes. Well, Donald Trump got rid of that, so now you can gun down bears and kill wolves. The Center for Biological Diversity is now suing the Trump administration because of this. James, do you think anything will come of this?
I haven't studied the lawsuit closely enough. I know it raises some constitutional objections, and beyond that, I haven't looked at it closely enough. But hopefully, it gets a fair hearing in the courts, and it offers at least one plausible opportunity for taking on this very dangerous bill, or this dangerous law, rather.
Colette Adkins, an attorney with the center, says it's outrageous that Trump and congressional Republicans use this law to promote the senseless slaughter of some of Alaska's most iconic wildlife. Well, we'll follow that one. James, do you know, are there lawsuits? Have lawsuits been filed on most of these or many of them?
This is the first one that I'm aware of.
Debbie, do you know if any other lawsuits have been filed?
No, this is the one lawsuit that has been filed, and everybody's looking at it. And, it has to do with the separation of powers and, just some fundamental issues here. But I think there are a lot of people studying, whether there could be more lawsuits. And one other thing, just so your listeners know, is that there are also a large community of people who are engaged in really standing up for working people and fighting back, and are, now that the Congressional Review Act is done, agencies now are going to try to go after rules by just publishing new rules that sort of repeal them or weaken them. And there's a large effort to, and a lot of that is illegal, and there'll be a lot more lawsuits filed On that front. So the Trump administration isn't done yet in terms of undoing rules.
A couple other rules. Two rules support state efforts to provide retirement programs to private sector workers. This applies to California. Another rule ensures more 4 million patients can continue to access a diverse network of safety net health care providers, including Planned Parenthood. These two rules are now gone, 2 of 14. And we've talked about almost all of them. There was also a privacy rule. It gives consumers the tools they need to choose how their internet service providers can use and share their personal data, and that rule has been repealed. We have time for one more caller. Let's go to GS in San Leandro. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'll keep my comments short because I'm in a noisy environment. I have a general comment. It goes back to Citizens United, and I won't go into that, but we've got to get the money out of politics. The bottom line on all of this is the difference between the public good and profit for specific individuals or organizations. And I, as a citizen, I'm just terribly concerned about, you know, I'll just say the current occupant of the White House and all the minions. What's happening? I mean, coal, mountaintop removal, you know, that's all about money, and it has nothing to do with the public good. So that's the difference. Seems to me that we've got to get the money out of politics so that the people can be served by our representatives.
Well, thanks for calling, Harvey. I know we have to let you go, Debbie. Quick final thoughts. Oh, did we hang up on Debbie? Oh, sorry about that. Debbie had to go. James, final thoughts from you on Harvey's point?
Yeah, you know, earlier I had pointed out how this was only used once during the George W. Bush administration, and I theorized at the time that it was because, you know, we had these sort of norms. But I think GS raises a good point. You know, this was also a pre-Citizens United world. And while it was important for members of Congress to drum up corporate campaign donations then, that just has been supercharged since. And, you know, I think they're always looking for new ways to pay back their corporate benefactors, and the Congressional Review Act is just another one of those things. And I mean, it just fits into this broader attack on regulations that we're seeing right now. I mean, the Congressional Review Act that we've seen deployed over the last several months is just the initial volley in this assault. And going forward, we're going to see things like, you know, just this week we saw the Trump budget, which would effectively hollow out the agencies that are charged with implementing and enforcing these laws. There's now laws moving through Congress that would make it harder for agencies to carry out their statutory missions. We have this Trump executive order that he released a few months ago that would force agencies to repeal two existing rules for every new one that they want to issue. I mean, this is all part of a broader attack to benefit corporations at the expense of the public interest. And, you know, the Congressional Review Act, I'm glad it's sort of attracting public attention to this issue. And I would encourage your listeners to continue following this this issue, because it's only going to get worse.
Well, we will definitely continue to follow this. James Goodwin, Senior Policy Analyst with the Center for Progressive Reform. James, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I also want to thank Debbie Berkowitz, Senior Fellow at the National Employment Law Project. And you can find more information about all of the rules that we discussed today at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thank you for joining us.